Impression without expression becomes depression. This wisdom was presented to us by Erin Laporto. You will get to hear from her today. She explains how your feelings are a message from your body. And of course, it's the same for our kids. So how do we attune to our child's feelings instead of telling them not to feel the way they feel? Maybe you jump in to tell them how you want them to behave, like, don't worry, or settle down, or you don't need to feel that way. In relationship, that response backfires. Do you know how to reflect back to your child how they're feeling? It's not an easy skill, however, it is learnable, and it is so worthwhile. Does your child have a speech-language delay and you really want them to talk? Do difficult behaviors derail home life and you know the frustration is a communication struggle? Does your child see a speech therapist and you wonder, what do they do and how can I help? If these or similar questions are in your mind, this podcast is for you. Hello, my name is Dina Lynn Rosenbusch. I am a speech-language pathologist that has worked with children from birth to 21 for 3 decades. And in my classrooms, I see you wanting to connect with the heart of your child, but their speech and language skills create a barrier. So if you have a kiddo that has difficult behaviors, needs to expand their language or learn to say speech sounds, and maybe even receives speech therapy, stay tuned, because in this podcast, you will learn how to use your daily life as a tool to communication practice and how to do that practice. You will become confident knowing you are making the difference you want to make. And you will hear success stories of parents who have navigated these struggles already. We'll do this all while focusing on building deep, meaningful connection and confidence in your kiddo. So grab a cup of coffee along with a notebook and pen. It's time to speak in the way your child's brain understands. And that is the language of play. Hey ho, I am super excited and happy to announce that the Language of Play is going to put on its first online workshop. This workshop is coming up in May, so stay tuned for further details as they unfold. And in the meantime, you can also look forward to a change in the Facebook link that's coming out next week, as I needed help to be able to make a page and know how to run social media better. And now we have this organized and that link is just about ready to be made public. So I'm excited for you to be a part of that too. Just keep listening and you'll know all the things that are going on at the Language of Play. It's pretty exciting here. Now let's get into today's episode with Erin Laporto. Erin Laporto is a somatic well-being and intimacy coach and the creator of the Embodied Freedom Formula for Transformation and Healing. After her own recovery, she studied with experts in yoga and somatic therapy, energy healing, bodywork, meditation, and trauma. She's been coaching since 2011 with a focus on trauma, eating disorders, and relationships. She brings a playful, intuitive, and compassionate spirit as she speaks on topics of self-love, self-care, and the importance of embodiment. So, Erin, thank you so much for being here today. We are talking to parents. And those parents, I'm sure some of them are dealing with kiddos that have had trauma, kiddos that have had eating disorders and relationship struggles. And many of those parents probably had them themselves. Which impacts our parenting. So would you share your story?
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the frameworks that I just want to name that I have for kind of how we all grow up in this world is that by the time we're in elementary school, we've already learned a couple things. We've learned that there is a right and wrong, and the authority that determines that lives outside of us. Right? We're listening to our teachers. We're listening to our parents. We're listening to, if we have religion in our lives, those leaders. And nobody really teaches us that there is wisdom in us, that there is a part in us that we can trust, which is why so many times as children, our trauma starts there, because when we're not in agreement with our parental figures, like we abandon ourselves and truth to force that alignment. And that's where we start kind of being in some state of disconnection with ourselves. And it can be the most caring, loving thing in the world that a parent could be saying something like, oh, honey, don't worry about that. But the missing the point of like, oh, honey, I see what you're seeing and I understand why you're worried. And I want you to know that those feelings in your body that are worry, tell me what they feel like. You don't have to be scared of those, but they're there to give you a message. And I want you to know that I see them and I feel them. And even though I see them, I'm not worried right now. And I'm not worried because of these things, right?
I want you to expand on that. Is so good. This is something that for me personally,
yeah,
I know. I grew up exactly like you said, where there's a right and a wrong, and the authority was outside of me. And it wasn't until I was later in my adult life that I learned this concept that, oh, wait a second, I have my own authority. I've got wisdom within me. How do I access my own thinking? Oh, feelings are for feeling. Oh, how do I deal with these feelings? What's going on in my body? Yeah. All of these things. And so, yeah, I've got some episodes parents could link to, you know, like I'll put them in the show notes, parents. If you are interested in episodes that are like these, where we need to teach our kids that feelings are a message, like you're saying, go ahead and expand more. I don't want to take your time, but I'm wow, this is so right.
Absolutely. But as a parent, and even to like be with our other relationships, like even, you know, we want to certainly give this gift to our kids, but we also can deepen all of our relationships in our lives when we learn to attune to where the other is instead of telling the other where we want them to be. Because whenever we're trying to tell somebody how to have what they should be experiencing in this moment, we are basically having somebody point directly to the things that we ourselves are not willing to feel. And the most honest thing that we could say, rather than don't be like that, be like this, is I really appreciate where you're at right now. And I'm having a hard time going there with you.
That would be so much more helpful for, I'm thinking of a teen especially. That would be so much more empowering for people and adult relationships to just know that, yeah, what I've got going on is valid. It's real for me. Mm-hmm. And somebody else just simply isn't able to handle it right now.
Yes. But that's affirming our identity. Yeah. Like if somebody can do that for us, they affirm who we are.
Yes.
And when we don't get that affirmation, then we start changing ourselves in order to get the affirmation. Even if that means acting out, right? Some of us like are like, why doesn't you like, you know, we can get so frustrated at our kids for, you know, literally, you know, we could say, you know, do this. Or don't do this. And like, that's the first thing that they have to run and do because they're trying to get some sort of attention, some sort of affirmation from the parent. They're looking for connection. And oftentimes as parents, we go into, I just told you like my perspective, rather than seeing in that moment, they're doing that not because they're bad kids, not because they want to be bad. These are all ideas that we've languaged. They haven't even been programmed to have that yet. They're just instinct and desire. So those little kids doing exactly what you just said not to do. One, they're exploring their world. They want to know what happened. It's like, don't think of a pink elephant. The first thing we even do as adults is think of a pink elephant, right? We don't understand don't in our minds. But we also want to understand that most of the things that people do, children, teens, adults, is to get some sort of connection or love. Mm-hmm. That no matter what the action is, no matter how out of sorts it is, we're just looking for that connection and love. And when that's missed or disregarded, we start to get all of those ideas about ourselves, like I'm not good, or I stink at school, or all of the other things that we take on and kind of can get pretty solid in as identities by the time we're young adults. But to really just have that permission to, like, one, take a beat. What was the intention? Can you even feel and sense into the intention behind whatever the action was? Mm-hmm. And can you get your kid to speak to that rather than assume the ideas and programming that have already existed in your head about how that's a good or bad thing to do?
Wow. That's so good. You're saying something that I say fairly often to parents, but I say it entirely differently.
Mm.
So what I have said is the children aren't thinking what you're thinking in your adult brain. Right. They've got a different brain. They've got other thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
So when you put your own thinking as a motive for your child, mm-hmm. you're probably wrong.
Yes.
And it's yet beautiful. We have yeah. no other thing in our head sometimes, especially if we're worked up.
Yeah. But
you just said, you know, essentially the same thing, but you said it so beautifully.
And the way you said it was quite beautiful too.
Well, thank you. And I, you know, like when you say that kiddos are, when they're misbehaving, so often they're seeking connection and they're mm-hmm. seeking love.
Yeah.
And my parents that I coach, they definitely want to be connected with their kids. They're good parents. They want to love. They might be missing a skill, but that does not mean they're not good parents. It just means we have a skill to learn, you know?
It's also important to remember that we as parents want to be loved.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And oftentimes we see when the kid is acting up that that is a sign that we're not being loved, that we're not being heard, that we're not being listened to, that we're not being seen, which is the root of trauma. There is nothing scarier than not being seen in this world. And there's this beautiful way that these kids come in at the age that we first got traumatized, that we first weren't seen. And then in their playful, joyful ways, they do it to us again.
Yeah.
So they are here. Like every time we see that, that is like an opportunity for us to heal those parts that weren't seen and to actually, you know, there's always like that saying that, you know, the things that we want, we should really give away.
Mm.
And this is where, like, I want to be seen. I want you to listen to me. Like, if we know that we want that so badly, the greatest gift that would give that to us and give the gift to our kids is to really see them, to really hear them in that moment and to understand, like, that is how simple trauma begins. That is how simple we start blaming our parents. You know, if you're an adult and you're like, my parents messed me up, or if you're like, kids are on that verge of you ruined me, you know, like all of these things, that it's as simple as like, you missed me.
Yeah.
You missed the love that I had here and I didn't. So we want to remember that it goes both ways too. And we want to take care of ourselves because we are the adult. So it's like, as a parent, we have to know we've got two kids in the room, at least at all times. We've got our own inner kid that is going to be having its temper tantrums and need lots of love and care. And that's the one that we need to take care of first, so that one doesn't start acting out in a big body towards another little one.
That's well said too. Wow. Very, very well said. Now, you've brought up this word trauma.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes when we think of that word trauma, we mm-hmm. put, well, we all come at it with different connotations. What actually sure. is trauma? And people tend to not think of their own stuff as trauma unless it's what I've heard referred to as capital T trauma. You know, like if it's mm-hmm. the stuff we hear about in the news, then it's yeah. capital T trauma. But trauma is much, much more than that. Mm-hmm. And trauma happens on a micro scale over and over and over again in our lives. And you're sitting here nodding and smiling. So go ahead, just take it and talk about trauma.
Yeah. So I love that. I love that we usually think about trauma as those big T events and then little T events for like the ongoing things.
Like a disappointment is like a little T sometimes. People brush yeah. it off like it's not important.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, it's really interesting because a lot of times it's not the disappointment that is traumatizing. It's when our disappointment is not seen or felt. And it's in research, I'm just going to compare the big events, the big traumas that we've all kind of heard was like 9/11 and Hurricane Katrina. Now, two very traumatic moments in very different ways. There was less PTSD in the people that experienced 9/11 than there was in Hurricane Katrina, for one kind of main purpose that they were able to deduce. And that is, in 9/11, for the most part, people could follow their instincts and return home and get their connections that they were looking for. You know, our instinct when something happens is to go home, to make sure that our people are okay. And in Hurricane Katrina, people were taken away from their homes and they couldn't return. They didn't have access to turn. They couldn't follow their instincts. They couldn't have that seen, heard, felt, really met. They were just kind of held away from getting the answers that they needed to move on. Some of them for months after Hurricane Katrina happened, they weren't able to return to that place. We're disappointed all the time. Disappointment is part of the human experience. But when we get berated for the way that we are expressing our disappointment, you know, like I'm always like, you have a right to every feeling in the world. You don't always have a right to act it out, or certainly act it out on other people, but to have that understanding. So these are little places that we just learn to think that we're wrong, right? And when I think of trauma, I love Gabor Mate's, who's a very famous physician and doctor who has worked with trauma for many more decades than I have. But he says that trauma is not what happens to you, it's what happens in you. And it is anything that makes you change the way you view yourself or the world. And that's where we really touch the fact that I don't care what color you are, we live in a world that kind of has these systems of oppression that we're all a part of, and that that is a trauma that is in all of our bodies as well.
All right, I got to repeat that.
Okay.
You said trauma is not what happens to us. Mm-hmm. It's what happens in us.
Yes.
And the reason is because it changes how we see ourselves.
Or the world. Yeah.
Or the world.
And we have things that is also, first of all, the nature of life, you know, like I'm aware, yeah. It's the nature of life is to change. Our self-views change, our worldviews change. That is the nature. But when it's affecting us negatively in any way for any reasons, then it is, you know, going into that world of trauma, going into that world that we're constantly having to process something extra or make adjustments to ourselves in order to make this negative thing fit.
Okay. So it's almost like denying yourself.
Anything that, yeah, exactly.
Denying yourself and your own experience, denying mm-hmm. your own feelings, denying, mm-hmm. denying what yeah. happened to you.
Exactly. Yeah. And if we get permission to have the experience, you know, to know that this happened, but we get an apology after and we get really seen, no matter what the thing is, there's less trauma there than when something bad happens to us, we don't get an apology, we're told to brush it off, then it carries with us. Because there was a, I don't know his name, and I never studied with him, but one of my adult clients did do some studies with this guy who came back from war. And he had all sorts of trauma. And what allowed him to heal his trauma was that he had to figure out in his own voice and vocal cords how to recreate the sounds that he heard on the battlefield. Because once he could say, this is what I experienced and passed it on in some way that could be shared with others, like he felt seen in a way that he didn't have to carry that anymore. So he ultimately became like a vocal coach. But that's like what we want to think about is like, okay, I also love the idea that impression without expression leads to depression.
Say that again.
Impression mm-hmm. without expression. So the impressions that we have on us without being able to express how they've affected us, how they've impacted us, leads to depression. And oftentimes, that's what we're missing too when we communicate with each other as parents with our kids, is that we just start going into, this is what you should do, this is how I want you to behave and perform. And we leave out the piece that, hello, child that I love so much, how you just acted is having this impact on me. It's causing me to feel good, bad, ugly, like I don't matter. Like, I want you to know that you just caused a feeling in me through your words or actions, that you have impact, that you are being seen, that you are in fact powerful in this world. And I'm not sure that the impact you just had is the impact that you are looking to have. So is there anything you want to talk to me about what the impact was that you were meaning to have? But there's this way of regulating and being honest. We can't have that conversation unless we are self-aware enough to know, what am I feeling? What does that feel like in my body? What would be a kind and loving way for me to express that without blaming them, but just educating them? And it's like, as little kids, it's like really simple. It's like, you know, you don't want to hurt mommy. You can't hit mommy. That hurts. But actually, you know, it gets a little more complicated having these conversations about impact as kids grow up.
Right. But it's so important.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for walking us through that. I think that that example is really helpful. And all you've given so, so much valuable insight and information here. I want to go back before we finish today, to have you do a role play on something that is really near and dear to me, and that is an apology.
Okay.
Because when we go back to our kiddos, and I want you to think about the child that is like 2 to 8, you know, like they're young, but yet their language is expanding and they're messing a lot of it up still.
Mm.
And we're going to that child who has said something to us or we've reacted poorly. How is it? If you could just role play and give us one of these good apologies. We know good apologies have lots of parts to them. And that seen and heard thing is really important. Yeah. So, would you give, I don't want the listeners to go away with all this head knowledge, but not too much that they can implement. And when I look at all of this great information, I think what I would like to spoon feed is to really give parents like a good apology, because that works in so many places with so many people.
So this is an apology that the parent did something is apologizing to child.
Yes, because that's how our children are going to learn how to apologize.
Yes, yes. So something happens.
Go ahead and read anything you want to.
Okay. So say we yell. Say we yell and we're short and we're rushing and we can feel ourselves in the moment. Like our child's heart's breaking and like we don't have the patience or the ability and we can't apologize in that moment. We're going to say this is a after school here. You know, honey, I just want you to know that I am aware that I was rushing this morning and that I did not make space or time to really hear you. And I know that I cut you off and I could see that that hurt you. Number one thing after that, is there anything else you want to tell me about how you felt in that moment? And sometimes it's like, it doesn't matter. You do that all the time. You know, sometimes it's like shut down and they're not going to want to open up in that moment. And that's really important information because that means there needs to be a lot more support. You need to play with different angles in order to get that open up. So if your kid does not want an apology, that is a sign that there's still a lot of wounding there and a lot of unsafety there that you can work on over time and just building this open. But then if it's like, it's sharing and they go right into kind of like, well, this is what happened. And I got really scared and I was thinking about it all day in school. And I just, you know, I felt like you didn't love me and like they can rattle off on all of that. Then that means they feel safe enough with you to share and to receive that. And that is when we're in the healing realms of the apology. And then it's just affirm, affirm, affirm. Say, I understand. Say, everybody makes mistakes at the other time, but I'm glad that you were able to tell me how you felt about this.
And never correct them.
Never. Yeah. Yeah. There's nothing that anybody could possibly feel that is like wrong. Yeah. So it's just like coming into that place where you're giving them permission to fully express what the experience was for them. And then just affirming, I know I'm not going to be perfect. Can you keep talking to me if I can do better? I want you to know mommy will take directions around this issue. And you can also frame like, mommy's not taking directions around all issues, but this is something that is important to mommy that you can talk to me about and you can give me input about this. If I can do better, please let me know. But to come up with a plan together and to really be open to the ideas that they have.
Wow. You've given a lot of information, and I think I will re-listen myself because like your wording and the picture that you drew is a little different than the pictures and wording that I've drawn. And sometimes when we listen to things more than one way, we start to understand more fully and more deeply. And listeners, I encourage you to re-listen to this episode because the amount of content that Erin has given is really, really valuable. And if you want to communicate with Erin more, I'll have her information in the show notes. And if you want to communicate with me, you know to contact me at hello@thelanguageofplay.com. And we can talk more about this stuff. There's so much. So Erin, thank you.
Thank you so much for your time. It was such a pleasure. And thank you for the good work. You're making all of our future generations a little safer, a little happier here. So
thank you. That is the mission, isn't it? Thank you so much. Hey parents, I hope you found this episode helpful. If so, would you please take 30 seconds and share it with a friend who also lives or works with children? I would really appreciate it if you would leave a quick review for the show on Apple Podcasts. I read every review and it lights me up to know that this show is making a difference. Then come join my Facebook community, where you'll meet other parents who are dedicated to helping their children grow too. You'll find the link in the show notes. Thank you for joining me. Now it's time to go. Let's pop our kiddos in the strollers and go look around outdoors and see what we have to talk about.